This is Matt Rogers from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
You know when people try on new food and suddenly it's like, wait.
That's the reaction a lot of people are having when they first try Kewpie mayo.
It's the one with the red cap and the little baby on the bottle. You've probably seen it in the grocery store before.
And if you've ever just walked past it, some people would say that's a huge mistake.
Because this mayo is different.
Most mayonnaise uses whole eggs. Kewpie only uses egg yolks, which gives it this rich umami flavor. It's smoother, deeper, and almost buttery.
Once people try it, they start putting it on everything.
Egg sandwiches, fries, burgers. Some fans even swear by dipping pizza crust in it.
And once you notice it, you start seeing it everywhere.
Chefs use it. Restaurants use it. People who really care about flavor use it.
Never tried it? Grab the bottle with the red cap next time you're at the store.
Put it on just about anything.
Then you'll understand.
Kewpie, the original Japanese mayonnaise.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
So everybody's been talking about the Lindsey Clancy verdict. It's 11-1 hung jury. Let's get into it.
Yeah, let's get into it. I mean, I don't know that anyone could have predicted this outcome. I definitely suspected that there was going to be a hung jury. What did you think?
I thought that she would be found guilty. I really did.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. With all the coverage and all the, you know, it just was really polarizing. I felt like there was no other path besides some version of like maybe a second degree or manslaughter verdict.
A manslaughter verdict would not have surprised me. There's just so many aspects to this case that are really interesting. And we're actually exploring a lot of the aspects of this Lindsey Clancy case in our other podcast. We're not covering Lindsey Clancy in the main episode yet, just because this case is still unfolding. There's no resolution to it, but it's got me thinking about Lizzie Borden, who I know is coming up, Casey Anthony, yeah. Andrea Yates. I mean, a lot of similar cases. I've just really been bubbling to the surface.
And is it this because they're women that are being accused of things that maybe people don't understand? Or why is this such a big story?
I think it has a lot of shades of all those cases. And why is it such a big story? I mean, you have an affluent woman. You have a horrific killing of these children.
Yeah.
Such a senseless tragedy. And you have a relatively obscure mental illness.
Yeah. I think it's the lack of understanding, right? Like just from general public.
And I'm not saying postpartum depression is obscure in its occurrence. It obviously occurs to a lot of women. A lot of women experience postpartum depression, postpartum psychosis less so.
Yeah.
But it's obscure in its understanding. It only affects half the population by definition. And people don't understand it. They don't understand what they're looking at. They don't understand what they're explaining. And you hear a lot of this come up again and again.
I was thinking the biggest misunderstanding is what is the insanity defense? Like, I think it varies state to state as to what that means, right?
You think the misunderstanding is just the fundamental presentation.
What is it?
What is it? Yeah. And the idea, and I've heard this repeated on television a lot, the idea that if you are found not guilty by reason of insanity, you just get to go home.
Right. And that's not the case at all, is it?
Not at all. You know, that if you are found not guilty by reason of insanity, you then go through another process by which you are, they determine if you're a risk to yourself and others. Many people have been, you know, found not guilty by reason of insanity and are in some sort of facility for decades thereafter. And I assume that's what would happen with Lindsey Clancy.
Yeah, and her attorney, his name was Kevin Reddington. He was talking about how her life is ruined, and it was the fault of an inexperienced doctor who prescribed these medications to treat that postpartum depression. He even went as far as asking Donald Trump to pardon Lindsey Clancy.
Yeah, there's been just a lot of crazy twists and turns of the cases this week. And I do want to mention that we are going to talk about this case more on Sunday with Brandi Churchwell from the 13th Juror podcast. But You know, you mentioned her medications. Let's talk about that for a second.
Sure.
She was prescribed SSRIs, specifically Zoloft for postpartum depression. It is a known side effect of these medications that you can have psychosis and suicidal ideation. I mean, all the elements of her mental illness were presented. And to me, I don't think it is a debate over whether or not she had this mental illness. The debate is whether or not she should be held accountable in spite of this mental illness.
Right. Yeah.
And the defense is essentially saying she should not be held accountable because she has a mental illness. She has a disease of the mind. That's what the law says. And the prosecution is saying, well, regardless of her mental illness, she still was able to form intent and plan. It doesn't make sense to me, and it didn't make sense to most of the jurors. The jurors voted 11-1 in favor of her acquittal. And the one juror that was the holdout that resulted in the mistrial, allegedly, five of the jurors have been interviewed now, allegedly this one man had said that he regardless of the law, he was going to find her guilty.
Yeah, from the very beginning, right? And never, ever, and they, you know, when they went back to the judge and said, you know, we can't find a path forward here. He kind of just held fast from the whole deliberation right to the very end.
Yeah, that's what they're saying. Now, he hasn't spoken out. I'm seeing this on the news, the same as everybody else.
Right.
This is still unfolding. And something new could have happened by the time we record this and aired, because it's happening in real time.
Yeah, that's fair.
But yeah, I mean, that's the story they're telling. Five jurors from the jury pool have now told the same story. And I got to research this more. I've never heard of this happening in America before.
I guess I would like your insight on the Patrick Clancy's attorney is fighting back the conspiracy theories that are kind of floating around. So Patrick Clancy is Lizzie Clancy's ex-husband, and there's these theories that it was actually him who did this, even though the defense has never disputed the fact that she committed these acts. Why do you think that people are going after him?
That's a really interesting development. And actually, I was watching an interview last night with one of the jurors who said that when they came out of the jury room and were made aware that there are these conspiracy theories involving Patrick Clancy, that was a big shock to them, that because there's no basis for that in the evidence or the trial.
Yeah.
They were really surprised that this had kind of evolved. This is, you know, to me, this is a symptom of social media. When you look back at killers through the years, you know, going back to the 1970s, going back to Ted Bundy. Ted Bundy really was the first kind of celebrity killer.
Right.
Ted Bundy had people showing up at his trial,
right?
Women he had never met before coming to his trial, saying they wanted to marry him, decrying his innocence. You can see this in every case of national interest from then on, that there's always some subset of the population that wants to believe that the person is innocent. I experienced this a ton when covering Manson. We just talked about this with Brian Koberger. This kind of idea of his innocence has spawned an online community. And I think it's all the same thing. And it's always disaffected or people who believe that if they accept this reality, this kind of alternative reality, that they are then privy to a secret and elevates them and helps combat that sense of loneliness and frustration. And that really is what all these, you know, so-and-so is innocent communities are about.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, interesting. Okay. Let's just move on here. I want to get to some of our comments from this week's episode specifically. We just released the episode on Gary Heidnik. Before we kind of get into the comments, maybe give us the Coles notes of who Gary Heidnik is.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
You know, when people try a new food and suddenly it's like, wait,
That's the reaction a lot of people are having when they first try Kewpie mayo.
It's the one with the red cap and the little baby on the bottle. You've probably seen it in the grocery store before.
And if you've ever just walked past it, some people would say that's a huge mistake.
Because this mayo is different.
Most mayonnaise uses whole eggs. Kewpie only uses egg yolks, which gives it this rich umami flavor. It's smoother, deeper, and almost buttery.
Once people try it, they start putting it on everything.
Egg sandwiches, fries, burgers. Some fans even swear by dipping pizza crust in it.
And once you notice it, you start seeing it everywhere.
Chefs use it. Restaurants use it. People who really care about flavor use it.
Never tried it? Grab the bottle with the red cap next time you're at the store.
Put it on just about anything.
Then you'll understand.
Kewpie, the original Japanese mayonnaise.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. I just love the fall season. Crisp mornings, pumpkin spice latte, and it's the best time to cozy up and play Spin Quest. They have over 1,000 different slots in all my favorite casino-style games. And they're running a deal for all new players, a $30 coin package for just $10. So this fall, grab your favorite blanket, visit spinquest.com, and download the app today.
Spin Quest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit spinquest.com for more details.
Yeah, absolutely. Gary Heidnik is on this week's episode. It's a case I've been interested in. I read a paperback on it, you know, probably in the 90s. You know, this case took place in 1988, 1989. Silence of the Lambs came out a couple years later. There was a bunch of kind of national paperbacks about the case. That's where I first read it in high school or college. And it's been a case that's stuck with me. The case is about a man named Gary Heidnik. He was severely mentally ill throughout his entire life, had a horrific childhood. Many of the same features that we see in other killers and in other of our episodes. And as an adult, he ordained himself. He became Bishop Gary Heidnik, set up a church in his low-income house in North Philadelphia, and began to capture women and hold them in his basement with kind of a nonsensical plot to repopulate the earth. That was what he was trying to do. And he literally held them in a pit in his basement, which is the same visuals that you see in Silence of the Lambs. That's where they got it from.
Yeah, and that actually is the comment in one of our YouTube members made. And I want to just read it out for you. It's, with respect to Silence of the Lambs, were you implying that Heidnik's case may have been an influence on the book / movie?
Yeah, it was definitely an influence on the book and movie. So the book, I believe, was published in 1988.
Yep, it's right. Thomas Harris.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, the book was published in 1988. The Heidnik case broke in 89. So the book was published before many of the details became known. So the movie borrowed much more heavily from the Heidnik case, because as the movie was in post or pre-production, as the sets were being designed, the Gary Heidnik case was all over the news at that time. So when you look at the set design in the movie and the character design in the movie, it very much reflects Heidnik more than the book does. I think the book is more coincidental. I don't know that it was. But having said that, Thomas Harris did research a lot of serial killers. And I want to say something about Silence of the Lambs. Silence of the Lambs is such a significant movie in true crime. And I'm really still exploring this idea of why.
It sure comes up a lot.
Yeah, it comes up a lot. I mean, one of the reasons is that it was the first major movie to proliferate the idea of FBI profiling, which has since been debunked. But it was, it really kind of kicked off a whole genre of kind of thriller movies.
Jonathan
about FBI.
Demme too, so good.
Yeah, yeah.
I wish he would have made more movies.
Yeah, but you know, Criminal Minds. You know, those kind of movies, NCIS, that kind of, you can, that all traces back to Silence of the Lambs, in my opinion.
Right.
But also, the other thing I'm seeing with Silence of the Lambs is that when it came out, a lot of people, a lot of killers like Joel Rifkin and Gary Ridgway, and they watched it and it really resonated with them. So there's a lot to Silence of the Lambs. Not also to mention that, you know, it is based on real killers like Ted Bundy and Ed Gein and others.
Right. Yeah. He didn't, it's my understanding that Thomas Harris kind of pulled from a lot of these people like Ed Gein, Ted Bundy to kind of create this character.
Yeah. The one scene that sticks out for me in Silence of the Lambs, do you remember the scene where there's a woman and she's kind of in a parking lot and Buffalo Bill says, "Hey, can you help me move this couch?"
It's the opening scene. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The best.
That scene is Yeah, verbatim from Ted Bundy.
Right. Yeah, because he's wearing, because he's pretending that he's hurt, right?
Yeah, Bundy called it the sling ruse. But yeah, the idea, he puts his arm in a sling and he gets in the van and he says, can you help me lift the thing into the van? That's from Ted Bundy. So there's a lot of direct pulls in that movie.
Let's shift gears here to an episode that we recently produced on Clifford Olson. Buddy, before I get to the comment, do you want to just kind of give us the Coles notes on that episode?
Yeah, great episode. I love doing Canadian serial killers. I mean, partially just because I'm Canadian. That's probably the only reason.
Yeah,
I'm
that
Canadian.
Makes sense. Yeah.
But, and I want to try and do more. We're running, there isn't as many great Canadian serial killer cases.
That makes sense too.
You know, as the other parts of the world. But Clifford Olson, they used to call him the Beast of BC from British Columbia in the 80s. He was really just a lifelong degenerate. He drove across Canada many times, taking advantage of jurisdictions that didn't communicate. He really figured this out.
This is a real problem in the 80s.
Yeah, he and abused many victims for decades, and then graduated into murder in the in a kind of small part of British Columbia. Targeted children, young boys and girls, and until he was finally caught. And to me, the biggest part of his case is the fact that he was a police informant, and actually he would literally commit a murder, then go to the police, offer to tell them about it in exchange for money. They would often dismiss him because he was informing on crimes all the time.
Right.
And then he would go out and commit another murder. And then once he was captured, he sold the locations of the bodies to the police for $10,000 a body.
I can't believe that was even possible.
It's a real dark spot on the Canadian justice system, for sure. The Canadian justice system has not handled serial killers well at all. I mean, you know, you look at the ones we've covered, Bernardo, Russell Wilson, Olson, MacArthur, none of those have had...
Robert Picton.
Yeah. None of those. All those are very sketchy police work.
Yeah.
A lot of missed red flags, ignoring vulnerable populations.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so I'm going to just get to the question. It's, how can he be highly adaptive but not intelligent?
Well, I think that just comes down to the definition of intelligence. You know, when we talk about IQ, you're talking essentially about, the only way to measure IQ is really through standardized testing. And Clifford Olson wasn't educated in that sense. I mean, he was a psychopath, which gave him that advantage. And he was a sadistic, full-on, you know, 40 out of 40 psychopath. So yeah, that advantage, which gave him a huge advantage as a predator. And he was very street smart. I know people toss around that term a lot,
right?
But he had a decent vocabulary. He could express himself very well.
That goes a long way, doesn't it?
It's huge.
I think that happens in a lot of, like, we were just talking about that. It was like Ted Bundy, these guys that they're just really eloquent and they're able to talk themselves out of these situations with, you know, Wayne Williams, you know, talking to the police, but just really eloquent and not, you know, sweating or, you know, being uncomfortable in front of police.
And these men also, they train themselves to talk about specific things. So Clifford Olson learned to talk to police through years of incarceration. He learned how to deal with authority and talk to the police through years and years of incarceration and years of informing on his cellmates. He learned the jargon. So he was really good at talking to the police in the community. He was really good at talking to the police in prison. He was really good at manipulating victims with his knowledge of law enforcement. But that didn't translate to other aspects of his life. You know, he couldn't argue, you know, he's not going to write a dissertation in college. Like,
sure.
You know, he was very specific. And if you think of Wayne Williams, he was very good at the con of selling himself as something greater than he was, recruiting young boys to come with him and saying, I'm going to make you a superstar. I'm a producer.
Right.
He was really good at doing that. But when you look at other aspects of his life, you know, like running a business or maintaining friendships, I mean, he couldn't do it. So a lot of times people say, well, the killer seemed like he was very intelligent. Well, they're very intelligent and, you know, they get very sophisticated and very, very good at specific aspects that enable them to lure victims.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean they're intelligent across all aspects of their life. They also, you know, if you're a psychopath, especially on the level of Wayne Williams or Clifford Olson, you lie with abandon, you know.
Right.
So it becomes very, they sound smart because they're lying all the time.
Right. You just get good at lying.
Yeah, you get really good at it.
Right. Okay. And actually, I'm just going to segue that into the next question. And this was from the Russell Williams episode. But I think the question kind of speaks to a lot of the episodes that we've covered. And it is, why are so many of these guys military?
I don't know. I mean, I love Fridays because these questions from the audience are so
great.
That's
a fair question, though, isn't
it? It is great. And it's something I've been thinking about and considering, you know, maybe exploring closer to Veterans Day or some, you know, sometime that has an excuse to kind of talk about the military. But I think if you are a 16 or 17 year old psychopath who really is coming into their own sexually and is scared of your thoughts and scared of the sadism that is encroaching on your fantasies and not understanding why your peers are able to attach to girls and boys and have relationships that seem out of reach for you, and your home life is chaotic because you're traumatized and you're abused, the military is a very, very good way to escape all that.
I wonder if, too, if it's like you're pressured to, you know, that's a way to straighten out your kids by putting them in the military.
Yeah, I think that's a valid point. And you see that with Gary Heidnick and others.
Israel Keyes,
yeah. Where, and again, you know, if you think of all these men, they have a similar trajectory, right? Their home lives are not good. Their parents are scared of them.
Yeah, Jeffrey Dahmer.
Their parents are worried about them. Their parents don't understand them. Their peers don't understand them. They don't understand their parents and their peers. It's a lot of conflict. And the military, the idea of being socialized to the military, that when you will means that you can take this troubled kid and he can go into the military. Yeah. And when he comes out of the military, he's now a respected veteran. You know,
right.
There's a lot of upside to it. So I think
from the outside, yeah, it seems pretty easy.
Yeah. So I don't think it's a coincidence that a lot of these young men end up there because they all kind of experience a similar trajectory growing up.
Next up is the Ed Gein episode, where we have lots of comments around the Netflix series that features Charlie Hunnam. First of all, did you watch this?
Yeah, I watched it.
And?
Well, I have a little backstory to this. We made a documentary called Psycho, The Lost Tapes of Ed Gein, for MGM Plus and Amazon. Mm-hmm. It features the only known recording of Ed Gein's voice. And when Monster, the Ed Gein story, went into production, Charlie Hunnam's people reached out to us and asked if they could listen to the tapes outside of the documentary to help build his performance, which we were very excited about. And I want to be clear, I never spoke to Charlie Hunnam. I don't know Charlie Hunnam, but this was very exciting for us when this happened.
Yeah, I remember.
You remember that?
Yeah.
So when Monster came out, I watched it like everybody else watched it and saw his performance. And his performance is nothing like the Ed Gein that is A, on the tape, or B, that we presented in the documentary. It is wildly different. So I'm not clear as to what he based his performance on, but it seems to have no basis in the reality of Ed Gein. And you can say that about the whole series. There's very little in the Monster series of Ed Gein that is factual. I mean, there's entire characters that are
how they made
up.
It was it's 8 episodes too.
It's a hard story to tell over 8 episodes. I will say that. I mean, it's a hard story to drag out for 8 hours is what I'm trying to say. So that was obviously a challenge for them. And I totally respect all the work that went into that movie. And Ryan Murphy is an incredible producer. I mean, the work he does is great. And I'm really looking forward to Lizzie Borden, actually. But yeah, in terms of, was it real? No, there's almost nothing in that Ed Gein series that you can point to and say, yeah, that is real. I mean, some of the names.
Right. Okay. Well, let's leave it there. So if you have a question that you want us to answer, let's just leave it in the comments on YouTube or Apple Podcasts, or better yet, you can DM us on Instagram at Unmarked Podcast, or you can hit up James directly at JamesBuddyDay on Instagram. Until next week.
Got stubborn spots, unwanted hair, or uneven skin? The CAPS Laser Center offers advanced solutions. They offer a full range of advanced laser treatments like Halo and Moxie that help reveal smoother, clearer, healthier-looking skin. CAPS is one of the top providers in the world for laser treatments, and their expert team delivers personalized care every step of the way. When you book your first Laser Center appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. So don't wait. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is Chelsea Handler from Dear Chelsea. Traveling with Doug is one of my favorite things, but when you're on tour like I am, bouncing between 35 cities, feeding your dog can get complicated. And that's why I started bringing Just Fresh from Just Food for Dogs. It's real fresh dog food made with human-grade ingredients that he's been obsessed with. But it's shelf-stable, so I don't need a freezer or a cooler or a whole travel operation just to feed my dog. Doug loves it, and I feel good giving it to him. So go to justfoodfordogs.com and get 50% off your first order.